to take the opportunity to introduce Alex Brown, who is our speaker for the day. Alex is a PMP and is a manager of the Strategic Planning Office at Mitsui Sumitomo Insurance Group. He has been a project manager for software development and financial services projects since 1993 and provides advice to peers internationally through his website, alexbrown.com. AlexSBrown.com. I want to make sure I give you the right one. His articles have appeared in several PMI newsletters, including Real Life MS Project, a column that he has in the ISSUG Review, which is the IS Users Group. He is an active PMI volunteer and has spoken at the 2002 PMI Symposium, the 2003 PMI North America Congress, and the 2004 PMI North America Congress as well, and now he's here this year. I want to make you all aware that this session is being recorded, so if you have any questions or comments that you want to give to Alex in confidence, could you, if at the end of the session you come up and talk to him directly when the microphone's turned off, so that then none of your confidentiality or industry secrets are given out. All right, without further ado, I'd like to introduce Alex Brown.
Thank you. Well, I want to start out today and tell you why I am here talking to you about project charters. I found a very interesting thing. I was looking around in the product literature, looking around in project management, seeing what's been written about charters. And I found out every Project Management 101 book talks about charters, talks about how important they are, how vital they are to your organization, how you must have one, and I can't find anything in an intermediate or higher textbook really much more specific than that. It's as if we all get our PMPs and we have to know that they're vitally important then, but after that we don't like to talk about them. So I thought this is an opportunity. Let's start talking about charters. And specifically, I was inspired by Rita Mulcahy. In 2000, and in her presentation a couple of years back, she gave a couple of questions to the audience. She was talking about the things that you really need to know as a project manager, the top items you need to know, and have a charter was one of them. And I ask you guys, with a raise of your hands, to respond to these questions here today. We'll see how we've done since 2 years back when Rita asked this question. How many of you are PMPs? Raise your hand. Oh, we got a lot of you here. Probably about 75-80%. That's pretty good. How many of you know what a charter is, whether or not you have your PMP? Who knows what a charter is? That's great. That's a lot of you. How many of you use a charter for every single one of your projects? Yeah, that's what happened there too. I think we're down to what, maybe about 10%, 20% of the group now raising their hands. Well, at this point in her presentation, Rita launched into, well, she was less than kind to the people who didn't have their hand out. She said, if you're a PMP, and you don't have a charter for every one of your projects, maybe you should have your PMP certification removed. Because you are doing lasting damage, not just to your organization, but to the whole profession. Now, you should have seen the audience. We were all looking down like this. We were like, I was one of the people who raised my hand and said I'd do a charter. And I felt like, oh my God, I'm sorry, Rita. I'll do better next time. I'm sorry. It was an emotional experience. But I think that's the wrong attitude to take towards charters. And actually, I'm going to take a cue from our keynote speaker at this point. I want you guys all to stand up and find a partner. Go to your left or to your right. Now, I promise, it won't be as interactive as our keynote speaker Pete was. No dog wiggling at all. Now, quiet down. I want you to give a really affirmative statement to the person next to you and feel this coming back at you, because this is what a charter ought to feel like. Say, I want to be the sponsor of this project. Say that to the person next to you. Say, I trust you to get this done. You are my project manager. Now wiggle like a dog. No, I'm just kidding. To me, that's the feeling that you should have when you got a charter. When somebody gives you that feeling of trust, because I do think there's a lot of truth in what Keith said. Attitude is everything. Your emotional experience will lead you in the right place. If you seek out that feeling of trust, that feeling that someone has given you authority, given you the right, you'll have charters. You'll have project charters. My guess is that many of you actually do have project charters. And I want to illustrate this way. What would happen to you if you didn't have a project charter? Well, we all know charters, they're about authority. They're about whether this project exists and is authorized by the firm. Does your organization know that this exists? Has somebody with enough power, budget, any kind of authority said, this needs to happen? Well, I believe that if you didn't have a charter, each and every one of you would be hearing that Donald Trump line, you're fired. And I'm not talking reduction in force. I'm not talking about a situation where you've been downsized. I mean being fired for insubordination, being fired for misuse of company funds, being fired for misuse of company assets. Okay, let's hear hands. Who in the last 6 months has been fired for one of those things? Anybody? How about the last 2 years? I'm not getting any hands. How about in your whole career? The truth is, most of us as project managers, we like to get permission. I've even heard some speeches. Neil Whitten did a speech about this, and he said, we need to ask for permission less. We need to be bold and go out and get things done, because we do always wait for permission. He said in his experience doing mentoring, maybe only 10 or 20% of the people who he mentor has ever even been warned by their boss that they're exceeding their authority. So the 80% or so of you who kept your hands down and you said, I don't have a charter, I don't believe you. I bet you do have a charter, and I'm going to illustrate that right now. These are the things we're going to run through today, more specifically. I want to make sure that each and every one of you can identify a charter. What is it? What's the range of real-life possibilities for a charter? From the simplest and the least formal to the most complex and the most formal. Next, I want to talk to you about charters and organizational strategy. Move into the why you want to have charters, what they can do for you, both for your career and for your organization. Next, I want to talk about negotiating, using a project charter. If you have a charter and you preserve it properly, you can save yourself a ton of time getting budget, getting people, getting authority, getting cooperation. Because let's face it, if your project exists and it's authorized by somebody high enough in your organization, you shouldn't have to ask. You should just tell people what you need. And if the authority's proper, they ought to give it to you. And lastly, this goes more into an organizational planning sort of topic. What policies and procedures could you have to make your chartering process better in your organization? Maybe a little more formal, at least more organized. And I'll share with you some of the things we've set up at Mitsui Sumitomo, which have really helped us, a very small company, 400 people, be very deliberate and controlled about how we start our projects. And I'm going to note, I'm going to talk and fill my time. I'm not going to leave a big question and answer period at the end. So if something comes up, there's a mic right there. Just get out of your seat, line up behind the mic, and I'll stop at an appropriate time and deal with the questions in the middle of this. I'd rather not have you wait for some question about something in the beginning till the very end. All right? Everybody okay with that? All right. So the first question we got to answer is, what is a project charter? Now, I'm sure some of you already know this inside and out because you've studied the PMBOK. But in the PMBOK guide, third edition, they define it as a document that's issued by the sponsor. So that's very important. It's got to be something that the sponsor has approved, put his or her stamp of approval on. This document needs to authorize the existence of the project. Now, this is very fundamental. Most of us talk about work that we're doing as even before they've necessarily become anything, because we think as soon as we have an idea, we're in the planning phase, right? We're starting to make a schedule as soon as we get an idea, pretty much. Well, there's a point in time where that project came into being. The charter is the product out of that point in time. It also provides the project manager with authority. So what can the project manager do or not do with their project? What are they allowed? What resources can be brought to bear from within the organization? Finally, if you look in the PMBOK, and I think this has confused many people I've talked to, there's a list of things that they say should be in a charter. They list things like return on investment, description of the products, business rationale, so on and so forth. I want to draw you back to this word right here. It says should. It doesn't say must. A lot of times you don't do a return on investment calculation for your projects. I can't speak for everybody, but I know I don't. A lot of times the business justification is unclear. It's very simple and straightforward. We never state it because everybody knows what it is. So a document that I produce might not have that in there because we all know it. Just because it's missing one or two of those items, it doesn't mean it's not a project charter. Okay, so we're going to go into some examples here. I'm curious to see how many of you think these things are charters. How about if you get an email or maybe a memo from your boss that basically says, here's something I want done, go do it. Give me a plan for this in the next 2 weeks. And you can involve three of the people from our department in it. Does that sound like a charter? That's a charter. Is it in any particular form? No. It would probably fit maybe on the top half of a typed page. It's short. But you got the key things in there. He's given you a project. He's acknowledged it exists. You've been given some authority over resources. And even though it only asks for a plan, we know that there's a good likelihood that it's going to go on and be more. So it doesn't have to give you the full authority for the full scope of the work. The charter can just take you through a planning phase. In my experience, most of the charters that we work with in real life in our company, the charter at the very beginning is just to plan it, just to expend the resources needed to come up with a plan and budget. How about this? If you have a standard formal project form, it's got a space for the title of the project at the top, a description, schedule information, budget information, and so on and so forth. Does that sound like that could be a project charter too? Wait, I left something out. Project manager, and some sort of signature or authority who said, this is real, we have to do it. Now, we as project managers can come up with all the project plans we like, but if there's nobody sponsoring this in our organization and we start to work on it, we're going to wind up in that you're fired situation pretty quick, right? If you don't tell your boss about what you're doing, you're in trouble. That's why that's a key difference between the email situation and some of these forms that you see. How about if you have a resolution at a committee meeting? A document, an idea for a project's brought forward, and the committee votes and decides, yes, this should go forward. Is that a charter?
What committee?
That's a good point. Yeah, one of the things they make a big deal of is the sponsor needs to be an appropriate sponsor, high enough in the organization to provide the correct support for the project that you're attempting. If it's a committee of the CEO, COO, and president, you're probably in good shape. But if it's the committee of the employee activity committee, well, if it's a major IT infrastructure issue, you're probably out of luck. That wouldn't qualify as a good authorization. But the resolution out of a committee meeting can often be part of your sponsor. You just take the minutes from that committee meeting and attach them to the document. And between the two of them, you've got, that's a good, valid charter. How about a hallway conversation? I corner you in the hallway and say, oh, I've got an assignment for you. Maybe it's the president of your organization, whoever is the topmost person in your organization, walks over and says, I want you to do this. You're the person who can get this done, much like we just did with the affirmation. They walk through that with you. I trust you. Make it happen. Is that a project charter? What do we think? Yes or no? I'm getting some hesitation there. Actually, this is one where I think I'd probably differ a little bit from the PMBOK. I think that's a perfectly valid charter. My father's a lawyer, and he's always told me, a written commitment is binding, but so is a verbal commitment, so watch what you say. And the only difference is you really can't audit it. You can't prove it. So it's not what you want to go forward with. What I'll usually do when I'm faced with that situation, I've been given one of those hallway assignments, is I go back to my computer and I type up an email to the person who gave me the assignment and say, this is what I think you wanted me to do. Can you please confirm? If they reply to that with a yes, print that out. Now you have a charter. It's just like example number one. And there's no reason why each and every one of you can't do that. But personally, I believe even if you skip that step, it's a chartered project. It's authorized. To me, the authority is the key. You can also have a collection of documents. As long as there's that signature on the cover letter from the sponsor, a charter can involve many documents. A good example of that would be a purchase order. Purchase orders can be charters in many organizations. Purchase order is usually signed off by the customer. They're authorizing new work to begin. I've seen many telecom companies where they treat each installation as a project. And the purchase order, requesting that installation, really is the charter. It brings the project into being. And it's been authorized by an appropriate person. And so attached to that purchase order usually will be the terms and conditions, the agreements, maybe a product description. You put those together, you've clearly got, at least as far as I'm concerned, a charter. All right. Everybody's heard on real estate. You know what the three rules of real estate are, right? Location, location, location. But when it comes to charters, yeah, I talk about the three A's. It's authority, authority, authority. What really matters about a charter, and this is so different than most project management documents, is have you gotten authority? Has there been that transfer? Has there been that agreement to move ahead? Have you been given, as project manager, the right to make this project happen? If you have, I'd say you got a charter. I feel the documentation is optional. I put a question mark in there so I don't get in trouble with any of you. I'm sure some of you think, yeah, you need a document. You need to have that written down. I guess it's maybe being in financial services, we do a lot just spoken. We do a lot of, hey, do this, hey, do that. And we don't get each other in trouble over it because we are treating a verbal command as being like a written one. But it depends on your industry. And certainly in terms of a cover yourself kind of approach, get it in writing. It's a lot easier that way. Another point I want to make is the charter can be very short. Since you're fundamentally just giving someone authority, unless the authority that you're giving them is very complicated, usually that can be in just a paragraph or two, sometimes just a sentence or two. These can be very, very simple, very, very short documents. The templates that we use give certain background information to help our executive committee make decisions about projects. And even with that background information, there are only two or maybe three sides of the page. I think I might have had one go through that was four sides long, but I really try and avoid that because you want to get to things quickly. You want it to be clear what your project is and what you're authorizing. If you put a lot of words around it, you get in danger of losing that key element of who's been authorized to do what. Okay, you also can have changing charters. This is in the PMBOK, but something that a lot of people get confused over. Each phase of your project probably has its own charter. So there's the charter at the very beginning that authorizes the very existence of the project. We've been talking about that quite a bit here. But you also, maybe when you're going into maybe the testing phase of a IT project, well, there needs to be an authorization to start the testing phase. And that's really what the charter is for that project. Now, you don't have to go back to your sponsor every time you enter a new phase. I know I've done a lot of work where my sponsor wouldn't even know what the testing phase meant, let alone want to know when it happened and be specific and be there to authorize it. As project manager, you may be given the authority for the whole scope of the effort. And as project manager, you can essentially charter that next phase. If you've got enough authority, there's no reason why you can't say, testing team, it's time to go. And chances are, every day when you work, you're writing emails like that to people, saying, here's a sequence of things that we need to get done. We're ready for that new phase. Make it happen. You'll also see as the project progresses, the charters may get bigger and bigger. If you take a large project plan or a budget and bring it in for authorization from a senior manager or a committee, in a sense, that's building a new charter. You're getting new authorization. So you have to understand charters as not just being one document at the very beginning, but being a series of documents that authorize different stages of the project through its whole life cycle. And sometimes they happen in a hierarchy. The project manager's given some authority, and then they delegate authority down to sub-teams or the project team members. Okay, this is my favorite question. How can I have a charter? My sponsor won't write it. Well, the PMBOK uses the word issues. The sponsor issues the charter, not the sponsor writes the charter. Now, you may say that's a technicality and a cheap shot, but I don't believe it. I think that absolutely it's a good thing, depending on the sponsor. Some sponsors will love to do this and they're very good at it. But very often you as the project manager ought to write the charter. You ought to write down what authority you should have in order to get to the next step and get the sponsor to authorize that. There's nothing wrong with doing that way. As long as you're not deceiving anybody, as long as you're not trying to hide your true intent from the sponsor doesn't have to be the one putting pen to paper to write this thing out or typing it up themselves via email. A lot of times you may be dealing with a senior executive, particularly if you're in a big project. They don't have time for that. Send them the information and have them just send you something back that says, yes, I agree. That's your best solution to that problem. Okay, now we're going to talk some about organizational strategy. Now, when I talk about organizational strategy, I've got a certain bias here. I'm in the strategic planning department. My boss is the chief planning officer. We deal with business plans and long-term strategies and documents like that on a pretty regular basis. We're a small company, so I can also do a lot of PMO functions. Yeah?
As you change on to the next one, I had a lurking question.
Okay.
That what I'm carrying away from this conference is that a written charter and a formal charter is not that important. A verbal communication, as long as somebody's giving you authority, is good enough. In the changing world for continuity, I personally have felt challenged, and there's always an if, team member, project manager, and more likely the sponsor changes for any number of reasons,
right.
Then we've got an issue. But what you are saying is it's you're not laying a stress on having a written document at this point, and I needed some more clarity on this. What is my takeaway here?
Well, I think just to repeat the question, it's essentially that is a takeaway from this that you don't need a written charter all the time. That's not something we should emphasize. I think if you want to have a mature organization, you want to have good control over your projects, please write it down. It's just silly not to. You mentioned changing sponsors. That's one of the best reasons to have the previous sponsor write down the charter, so that then if they leave the firm for some reason, someone else takes their place, you can bring that document to the new person and say, this is the authorization I had before. Can you extend it? Or is this now null and void? You can have that conversation. Without the written information, when somebody leaves, it's very hard to handle. So I absolutely recommend writing it down. But I think I would draw the distinction and say, Don't beat yourself up that you're running an out-of-control project if you only have verbal authorization. Okay, we got someone in the back.
The Sarbanes-Oxley required documented charter, or Canada CSA 119?
You asked if Sarbanes-Oxley requires documenting a charter. I'm not an expert on Sarbanes-Oxley, so I'm not sure. But I know we do document all of our charters, and we send them to an executive committee, and we have a procedure that controls that. And that, I know, will help us in complying with some of the Sarbanes-Oxley requirements, because it does demonstrate a level of control. I think it's a good procedure. I think it's a best practice by all means. Okay, so let me see. One of the things that I found is very useful about charters in my work as a strategic planning person is that charters are something you can talk to your business people about. You don't have to be a project management expert to understand these basic, high-level, 2 to 3 page documents. And there's something you can tie into your strategy. Because if, say, you have an initiative that's going to grow your revenue, and revenue growth is absolutely the top organizational goal right now, then it's really easy to line up. If I were to show you a Gantt chart for that project, you would have no idea whether this is going to grow your revenue. Gantt charts don't answer that kind of question. Neither do schedules, neither do budgets. You need that business justification. Charters are a good place to put that in there. And I believe if you as a project manager would like to be involved in strategic decisions, taking the chartering process seriously is your best opportunity to get involved. Because you can come in and you can say to your sponsor, well, yeah, we got a basic charter. I understand I have authority. But how is this fitting in to this initiative that we're doing as an organizational-wide goal for growth? How can we make sure that this is clear, that this is part of it? This is going to change the thinking on the part of your sponsor. If you're coming to them saying, I want to understand the strategic fit, they're going to look at you and say, wow, maybe the next time we're talking about strategic fit, maybe I want to invite this person. I know a lot of us complain. I've certainly complained. What do we always do? We get brought in at the end, right? After the strategies have been set, after they've figured out what they want done. Oh, come here, project manager. I have a little task for you. And it's this big, and it's a terrible idea, right? We've all had that happen to us. Well, I think we can take on a better role in the organization. If we keep our charters short, keep them results-oriented, keep them business-oriented, not full of a lot of jargon, but full of business-oriented terms, something that your sponsor can understand and say, yes, that's what I want you to do. Something written in the language of your sponsor. And I say not so much technical words. Your sponsor may be a technical person. I'm sure some of you are doing projects for professional engineers, CIOs, and so on. It can be in their language. There can be a lot of technology in a proposal like that. But it's written so the sponsor is getting that sense of business value, strategic direction. I also think we need to make sure that we're aware of what the strategic goals of our organizations are. Not every organization has a mission statement, but I can bet that at some point your CEO, your president, they've spoken before groups about what direction your company's going. Maybe it's internal, maybe it's on a shareholders conference. Somewhere you can dig up information about what the company's trying to achieve. Keep an eye out for those nuggets and say, how can I tie my projects into those? And the charter is a perfect place to mention that kind of connection. Now, I call the chartering of a project a moment of opportunity. We can either be the project manager that is given the assignment, and we say, yes, thank you. Thank you for the assignment, and off we go. We go to do it. Or we can come in and say, let me make sure I understand you. Let me make sure I understand why we're trying to do this, what we're trying to accomplish, what we hope to get out of it. You might say, no, I don't want to manage that one. That's not a good fit for me. If you go to a professional, if you go to a lawyer who specializes in divorce cases, say, and you say, I've got a serious patent problem. I want to get this trademarked, and I want to get something else patented. What will that lawyer say to you? The lawyer will say, I can't help you. He'll say, I'm a professional, I know what I can do, and that's not it. Every time we say that senior management never consulted us when they gave us a project assignment, that's not entirely true. Somebody consulted us. Somebody gave us the assignment. We have the power to have a conversation when somebody has an assignment. You can say, I don't think that's appropriate. You might not wind up employed any longer, but you can certainly say it. And actually, if we were a true profession, you would be obligated, if somebody gave you a stupid assignment that you couldn't do, it wasn't within your realm of expertise, you'd have to say no, even if it did get you fired. That's the kind of code the doctors and lawyers live under. If a hospital tells an anesthesiologist to be a surgeon, the anesthesiologist has to refuse, because they're not trained for it. That's part of the code that they follow as a doctor. Because, yeah, they might be fired if they refuse, but if they go and do the surgery, they could be thrown out of the medical association. They might not be allowed to practice medicine anywhere ever again for the rest of their lives. What choice would you rather make in that case? So, I think we've gone through this. The charters, strategists love the charter because they're clear, they're simple, they're business-oriented, to the point. And also, a lot of times strategists need projects to achieve their strategies. So I think you can get a good rapport going with the strategic thinkers in your organization, particularly if you're having these types of conversations with them. Okay, now, let's talk about negotiations. Personally, I love negotiating. Anybody here too? Who here likes going out to shop for a car? All right. You guys who are raising your hand, you wouldn't go to Saturn because they won't let you haggle, right? That's the way I am. I actually enjoy the process. My wife once sat, I've got a large family, my wife sat with our 7 kids in the car dealership for 6 hours. I think she got about $1,500, $2,000 off the price in those 6 hours. We were both happy. We were like, this is great. They were closing, so we couldn't stay any longer. But you know how it goes. Those of you who raise your hands understand exactly where I'm coming from. Okay, so how do you get resources as a project manager? Well, a lot of the time we don't have direct authority. Sometimes we do. We might be able to have our own staff and budget do things for us. But very often we have to go beg, borrow, and steal, right? Try and go to our friends or go to managers who we think are sympathetic to our cause to try and get those resources. A lot of times you have to go to your sponsor and say, hey, I'm not getting the cooperation I need. I need to get at least one person from sales and one person from operations, and please help me do that. Well, I'll tell you, you also have the charter. A lot of times, you can negotiate on the basis of that simple document. In our company, we try and have our charters all approved because we're a small company. They're all approved by an executive committee of 5 people, including president, chairman, CEO. So it's very hard to argue that nobody wants those done, because they've all sat in a room together and said, yes, this is approved, and it was minuted, and it was dated. So we don't get too much pushback from people. It saves your sponsor a lot of grief if you work problems that way. If you show somebody the charter and say, look, I need your people. It says right there. I got authority for them. So what the charter's got on there are really the key questions that anybody who's going to be heckling you, giving you a hard time, trying to undermine your project, and we all know they're the enemy, right? These are the questions that the enemy asks. Who gave you that authority? Well, how much authority did you get? Why is this important anyway? We've all heard these questions. A good charter should answer those questions. A good charter will let you negotiate past those questions without making any phone calls, without calling in any favors, because you've been authorized. You've been authorized by somebody important in your organization. and crossing you with that piece of paper is like crossing them. That's what you can do with your charter. So again, you want to write your charter knowing in advance that later you will use this as a negotiating tool. Make the charter action-oriented, specific. Be particularly specific around how much is being authorized. If your sponsor is writing the charter, him or herself, make sure that they're specific about who, what, when, where. What's the scope of this authority? What do they want done? And then you can hold it up and say, see, the sponsor wants it done. It's real easy. And you will come into situations, it's not a cure-all, you will come into situations where you show somebody the project charter and they say, yeah, that was a good idea then, but now we've had a big crisis in the company and I just can't give you those people, or I can't release that budget. I can't make that equipment available to you. Well, in that case, you've at least done the groundwork for your sponsor. Because at that point, you're going to need to call your sponsor. I don't think there's any other way to handle situations like that. The sponsor's job is to resolve those organizational difficulties, clear the path for you when it needs to be cleared, deal with priorities, deal with getting things through. But you've done the advance work for the sponsor. You can have a very quick meeting to say, look, we've worked it all out on paper. Here are your two or three choices. I'm sorry we couldn't figure out what was the best thing for you. Maybe you can even come up with a joint recommendation. So you as project manager, the resource manager, you can even get on the same page as to what you think is the most responsible thing to do for the organization. Bring that to your sponsor. Your sponsor will love you. They will love you. Because you're not bringing them some open-ended problem. You're not sending them off on some wild goose chase for resources. You're essentially bringing them a nice, clear choice. That's what the sponsor ought to provide you, are answers to those kinds of choices. The charter can help you get there. Okay, now, as much fun as it is dealing with charters on a single project, to me, they're even more fun, even more powerful. And this goes back to, in the back, we were talking about Sarbanes-Oxley. How about the policies and procedures for your whole organization? What processes should you establish to have good control over your project startup? Now, I believe that charters are one of the key things to really demonstrate maturity in an organization. And actually, I'm a little disappointed with a lot of the maturity models that you see, because they don't talk explicitly about charters all that much. It's not something that you build up on. It's not a central item. But when you think about it, what's more important than the document that brings the project into being? I mean, if you can control your projects from the very start, control what resources are being allocated to them for the very planning stage, just when they're an idea, a thought, you've set up a good trend for controlling costs, controlling people, throughout the whole project life cycle. You can also use this as an opportunity to tie together your strategies that you have as an organization, your overarching goals, your long-term goals, your short-term goals, and say, this is how the project supports those. Now, that kind of thinking is key if you want to have a mature organization. How is OPM3, how is that being sold by PMI? Bridging projects, strategy. I think you can do a lot of that simply with charter. This is the quick overview of the process that we go through. At Mitsui Sumitomo, we've got, I said, about 400 employees in the U.S. We go through this step-by-step procedure where anybody in the company can have an idea and write it up on a simple 2 to 3 page form. So we take an idea and we turn it into an opportunity document. An opportunity document is basically another word for a charter. It's just what we call it. So that document's going to describe things like, what do we want to accomplish? What's the title of this? It may suggest a project manager and sponsor. The risks of doing this. The risks of not doing this. key information that our executives have said they want in order to make decisions on things at a very early stage. Now, we need to get some senior approval, though, because it may be just a rank-and-file person from our operations area who's got this idea and made the suggestion. I'll work with anybody in the company to draft one of these up. That's part of my job, to help people do that, because we want them coming from the top and the bottom of the organization, all through. But at some point, we have to get a chief officer approval. So anybody, any chief officer level person, chief operating officer, chief underwriting officer, we need at least one of them to sign off on this, and the ones that are affected by the idea. So if it's an underwriting idea, it's going to be the chief underwriting officer. And if it doesn't really fall into anything we do today, my boss is the chief planning officer. He can sign off on those. Now, those proposals go to an executive committee. We have five members of that committee, including our president, CEO, chief operations officer. So really the top level people in the firm. They sit down, they get a copy of them about 2 days ahead of time, and they sit down. I'll usually be there, or my boss will present the idea, and they'll vote on it. If they say, yes, this is a project, well then, okay, that opportunity is now approved. If they disagreed with the project manager or sponsor role, they'll change it. So you know that the project manager has some authority, because we talk about that name in this meeting. And I walk out and add this project to our list of projects. It's the only way things get on that list of projects. I then email that to the people involved, the sponsor, sometimes the chief officer who approved it, always the project manager. So they now know, you've got authority, start planning this. You're going to have to come back to us later with a budget and other information like that. Most of the time we don't have a budget at this stage, because it's just too early. But you're going to have to come back and get more authority later. But you have authority to start. And if this thing stalls, the top executives are going to know, because it's on our list. If it just sits there and doesn't change, pretty soon I'm going to follow up with them and say, what's going on? You've got a problem. See, the thing that I really love about this process that we have is we've got executive decision from a very, very, very early phase. You figure we don't really even have a strong schedule most of the time. A lot of times we're going out to buy software packages. We may not even know which vendor we want to choose. So we can get that involvement at a very early time. And then after that, the executives can forget about it pretty safely until the plans are ready. It's also a good startup control. So we've got a firm control in mind, and our internal auditors love this, because they can go through and say, every one of these projects on the list has one of these documents. Every one of those documents was approved by our committee at some point in time. And I can look that up for them if they really want evidence. And we can pull up meeting minutes and show them, yes, this was the date, here's the proof. The meeting minutes were even reviewed and authorized. So it gets really strong controls. Everybody knows why something's on the project list. The authority is also clearly documented. We know who was given authority to act as project manager, to act as sponsor. Like I said, our audit, our financial people, our governance, people are really happy that we're doing this, because they can understand the process. We've even written a few pages of policy and procedure that explain how this process works. So it's not just a piece of folklore that I know about and my boss knows about. It's something that's on our intranet. Anybody can download that and understand what process we go through, and then download the template and start a new idea down that route. We found it's very good as a way to encourage more people to come to us with ideas for projects. We even go out, and I've gone out and trained a lot of people in how to fill out this document. And I don't get a lot of proposals from line-level people. It would be foolish to think that I would. But I've trained a lot of line-level people in how to do it. And those few ones that I have gotten from that part of the organization have been great ideas. So I very much recommend that. So I really think that charters have been done a bit of a disservice. you know, program and portfolio management. How many of you heard about project selection methods, project prioritization methods? We've all heard about those from the portfolio management people, right? It seems to be like a mainstay. Well, what about project startup? This is one of the things that we struggle with in our department. It's great to go through and say which projects come first in order to meet our strategic goals. But what about the projects that are missing? What if I need an idea, if I need a project out of an organization that nobody's starting up that project on their own? I think that project startup should be much more of an official part of the program and portfolio management role. Actually, being the person to come up with the ideas. We're starting to move now towards doing a regular review of our strategy versus our list of projects, and essentially reconciling the two both ways. The strategy may change, some of the projects may get canceled, people talk about that a lot, they may be reprioritized, and we may need to create a lot of new initiatives, because we may be short someplace. What if our growth ideas didn't pan out? Well, we need to come up with more growth ideas so that we can put them in the hopper, get them going, and that's our only chance of meeting that goal. I also think we got to teach charters beyond the project management 101 level. I don't see a lot of people showing examples of what a good charter looks like. The simple examples that I gave you here, the questions about, is a hallway conversation, could that be a charter? I don't see people even talking about that. We're sort of at that level of just memorizing PMBOK definition. Got a question or comment about that?
Speaking of examples, do you have any that you're willing to share with us?
Ah, good question. Do I have any examples that I'm willing to share? I will offer, if you're interested in seeing some more about the templates, they were too long to meet the paper requirements, so I couldn't put them in there, but I'd be happy to email some information to you about that. You can either get my email address at the end of this and request it from me, or we can exchange cards.
As a follow-up to that?
Yeah, sure.
The New York State Department of has a project management office. They have a website, and they have templates for all of the project management tools that are used by the state. And there are absolutely charter templates with instructions. They're available to download for free.
That's great.
It's a good resource.
Can everybody hear that?
New York State.
Is that the Office for Technology?
Yeah, that's it.
So it's a New York State Office for Technology. I guess we don't have a web address, but you can probably put that into Google and get that. The thing that we're really a long, long way away from figuring out is what makes a truly great charter. Like, what are the best practices for the best organizations in the world at starting up new projects? I just don't see a lot of research and study going on that way. And I would love it if there was. It would certainly make my job easier. And I also think that you could use charters to study things like return on investment, organizational maturity, and strategic alignment. One of the interesting comments I've heard is there's an IBS and Reginato did a study trying to calculate return on investment for project management. And they found it was very, very difficult to do. I kind of wonder, I've read their book, and they really didn't make much use of the charters at the beginning. I wonder if that would be a way to try and take a better stab at that. And not to put the IBS study down, it was a wonderful study. There's a lot of useful information out of that. But certainly in view of the fact PMI is launching a new study now about return on investment, I think that's a sign that they didn't have the last word that we're going to hear on that subject.
And use the charter as the foundational document of that study as opposed to just something that's brought in on occasion.
Yeah, I found that the charter makes a great foundation for so many project processes. Like, we have a metric that says, we want you to define a target date for when you're going to deliver the plan to the main committee. We set those targets all from the charter date. I measure a lot of things based on the charter date. And we go back to the charter very often to say, well, what did we want in the beginning of all of this? Because, you know, projects change over time. Your goals change over time. But if you want to go back to the beginning, there's really nowhere else to go that's at the very, very beginning except for that project charter. Because usually it's just conversations besides that. Here in the back.
In a follow-up to that, if your project does change significantly after risks and so on, risk assessments, and you don't have a choice, you have to go completely aside of your charter, should you change your charter? Should you restart? Or, well, not restart, but update your charter?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. If you have a lot of change, should you rewrite your charter or republish your charter? I've certainly had projects where, this is our kind of sequence of events for most projects, is first they're an idea, then they get authorized, they're chartered, then we have a plan, and then we execute the plan, we do closeout, post-project reviews. So what's happened with me a lot is between the chartering and the plan, there have been tremendous changes. And the plan really doesn't look a lot like the charter. Some of them have changed the name of the project because all of a sudden they realize that, well, what we wanted to set out to do, we're doing something related. It's not that we gave up on it, but the original concept was all wrong. It's not what we wanted to do. We don't go back and change the charter, except under very rare circumstances. I think we might have done that once. We'll certainly let them do it if they want to. We'll bring it back to the chairman's committee. They can reauthorize on that. But what we usually do is just have the plan essentially supersede the charter. Because once the plan's been authorized, it's got the schedule and the budget. But we try and keep a lot of the same information in the plan as well. So that can stand in. But, yeah, sometimes we'll also cancel one project and restart another that's related if we've really gotten, so it's very, very different objectives. And I don't know what the best practice is on that. I don't know what we do. any other questions? All right. Well, I think I want to go back to the questions I originally asked. Let's try this again. All right, how many of you now know what a charter is? That was pretty good before, but this is even a little better, I think. And how many of you now recognize that you probably do already have a charter, at least in verbal form, for your projects? Yeah, that's more like it. Yeah. Getting a good response now. And how many of you want to go back and try and improve your processes around project startup at this point? You see some possibilities. That's a tougher nut to crack. And I'll tell you, just as a warning, if you are interested in really changing your organization around this, you will absolutely get pushback. It's one of the most sensitive and political decisions is starting up the project. Who's allowed to do that? Who's not allowed to do that? Who has the authority? Who doesn't have the authority? And we had a lot of backdoor ways to create new projects or to get things done. And we really had to, I think it's really only in this year, and this is about 2 years that I've been with the company, it's really only in this year that we're starting to lock things down and saying, no, this is the only way you get, in our case, we only do the cross-departmental projects. This is the only way you get a cross-departmental project done. We're just now getting to the point where we've really shut all those doors. All right. Here's my contact information. You can get in touch with me through my website, alexsbrown.com. If you'd like to come up and exchange business cards, I'd be happy to. I'll be up here for pretty much as long as anybody's interested in talking to me. I hope you have enjoyed this. I hope you now see the value and the importance of charters. And I give yourselves a round of applause, because I think we all realize that. You do have to.